That portion of Scripture gives us an introduction to some people who have lived before and have left a legacy, and a legacy that this morning we want to just connect to a little bit and see how we fit into that picture of leaving something behind for those who follow us. It gives us the introduction to Noah right at the end, and we want to talk about Noah a little bit in a moment. As already was mentioned, today is Grandparents' Day. How many of you knew that? Let's see your hands. How many knew that today was Grandparents' Day? Well, just a few. My calendar says it is, and so when I talked to Ken, he asked if I would kind of address that a little bit, and so I will try to do that as well as focus on communion later on. Some of us here, as we all know, are grandparents. Some will be. Some would like to be. And I'm inviting all of you to listen so that maybe someday you will be grandparents, and maybe there is something in here this morning that will help you to identify that way. Someone has said, and I think Abe Block alluded to that last Sunday, about having your grandchildren first. He said something to the fact that if I knew it would be so much fun, I would have had them first, or something like that. And many have said that. Is that possible? Maybe you young people who are so up to it in school with all the fancy gadgets could figure that out. I don't know. But maybe it doesn't work. How many of you here this morning are grandparents? Let's just see your hands. How many are grandparents? Oh, there's a good number. Another question. How many of you were first-time grandparents this year? During the course of this year, I knew there would be at least one because we had an over there. So there's a few. First time. And you feel rather young to be grandparents, don't you? Anyway, the question is, do we think that our life is going to influence our grandchildren? Do we think that our life is going to influence our grandchildren? What about our great-grandchildren? We have to admit that our grandchildren are a lot smarter than we are, especially when it comes to computer. Just talking to Gil the other day, he got a new phone, and he says, my 2.5-year-old knows how to switch that on and off and press the right buttons to get stuff at 2.5 years old. I can't even turn our TV on and off. I have to phone my son. I did. That's a fact. Last night I wanted to turn off the satellite and the TV and I couldn't turn it off. And I had to phone him, how do you do this? And now I had it turned off and I couldn't turn it on. So my sermon this morning is going to be a little bit different. We want to focus on grandchildren a little bit and some of the things that they come up with at times. And so allow me to share several experiences of people or of grandparents that they've had with their grandchildren. And then we want to concentrate on Noah a little bit. A grandmother was telling her little granddaughter about her own childhood. We used to skate outside on the pond, had a swing made of a tire. It hung in a tree in the front yard. We rode our pony. We picked wild raspberries in the woods. The little girl was wide-eyed, taking this all in. At last she said, I sure wish I had gotten to know you sooner, talking to her grandmother. A grandfather says, my young grandson called the other day and wished me a happy birthday. He asked how old I was, and I told him 62. He was quiet for a moment, and then he's asked, did you start from one? Guess he figured he was pretty old at 62, eh? After putting her grandchildren to bed, a grandmother changed into old slacks and a droopy blouse and proceeded to wash her hair. As she heard the children getting more and more rambunctious, her patience grew thin. She threw a towel around her head and stormed into their room, putting them back into bed with stern warnings. As she left the room, she heard the three-year-old say with a trembling voice, "Who was that?" Another grandmother writes, "I didn't know if my granddaughter had learned her colors, so I decided to test her. I would point out something and ask what color it was. She would tell me and was always correct. It was fun for me, so I continued. At last she headed for the door, saying wisely, 'Grandma, I think you should try to figure some of these out yourself.'" My grandson Billy and I entered the vacation cabin. We kept the lights off until we were inside to keep from attracting insects. Still a few flies followed us in. Noticing them before I did, Billy whispered, "No use, Grandpa. The mosquitoes are coming after us with flashlights." My grandson asked me how old I was, and I teasingly replied, "I'm not sure." "Look in your underwear, Grandpa," he advised. "Mine says I'm 4 to 6. Our grandkids are a lot smarter than we think they are, huh? Just another one. A little boy surprised his grandmother one morning and brought her a cup of coffee. He made it himself and was so proud. He anxiously waited to hear the verdict on the quality of the coffee. The grandmother had never in her life had such an awful cup of coffee. And as she forced down the last sip, she noticed 3 of those little green army guys in the bottom of the cup. She asked, "Honey, what would 3 little green army guys do in the bottom of my cup?" And her grandson replied, "You know, Grandma, it's like on TV. The best part is waking up with soldiers in your cup." Soldiers, he had it mixed up a little bit. And then there's a personal one from my experience. Just recently we were babysitting, or grandparenting, I should say, I prefer that word, our 2.5-year-old, that's Gil and Deb's son. And after lunch is always, if he stays at our place over lunch, after lunch is always nap time with Grandpa. And so we lay down, and Grandpa pretended to sleep, of course. You know, he just kind of squinted through his eyes a little bit. And after a while, I guess he figured, well, is Grandpa really sleeping? And so I see this hand just moving in front of my face like this, back and forth. And Grandpa didn't move. He slept and didn't stir. And then all of a sudden, I felt that finger touch my nose. Is he really sleeping? Well, those are experiences, and you probably, those of you who are grandparents, probably have stories to tell about your grandparenting experience. And it is important in all of this that we leave a legacy, leave an impression on their lives that is constructive and is godly, and assure them that they can count on us, that they feel comfortable, that they can count on us. In Genesis chapter 5 and on, we have an account of a man named Enoch. He was the great-great-grandfather of Noah, if I figured that out right. And some of you may be able to do this better than I think that is right. And it says that Enoch walked close to God, and because he did, the legacy of his obedience and respect for God was passed on to the following generations. And that's why we read that portion of Scripture this morning. And then there's Noah, the great-great-grandson of Enoch. In Genesis chapter 6, And I want to read a little more there if you want to follow. Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. The Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and was grieved in his heart. The Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to birds of the sky, for I am sorry that I have made them. And I listen to this. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Verse 9, these are the records of the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Noah walked with God. And skip over to verse 13. Then God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. And behold, I am about to destroy them within the earth. Make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. You shall make the ark with rooms and shall cover it inside and out with pitch. And then you have the instructions on the dimensions and so forth. If you skip over to verse 22, it says, thus Noah did all that God commanded. Chapter 7, verse 1, then the Lord said to Noah, enter the ark, you and all your household, for you alone have seen to be righteous before me in this time. Verse 4, for after 7 more days I will send rain on the earth, 40 days and 40 nights, and I will blot out from the face of the land every living thing that I have made. Noah did according to all that the Lord had commanded him. Thus far. For 120 years, Noah faithfully did his work and proclaimed the gospel as he did that, preached. All this time, people were laughing and mocking God while Noah labored away on this big boat. A tedious task for 120 years. And after that time, we need to remember there was only 8 people that heard Noah or that followed Noah. So the question comes, does a grandparent's faith have an effect on future generations? Are we as grandparents setting the example like Enoch and Noah did? In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 5, we have some more information about Enoch. It says, by faith Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God took him up. For he had obtained a witness that before his being taken up, what? He was pleasing to God. Noah or Enoch was pleasing to God. We all want our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren to turn out like Noah did, to be faithful, to be obedient, to hear what God, follow God's instructions. And so we think of what happened. What was it that God God was pleased with in the life of Noah? And there's a number of things. First of all, he was a righteous man in a totally corrupt age. We read there that the world, the people of the world had just totally turned corrupt. And so he lived in that setting. We read that in Genesis chapter 6, 8 and 9, and then also you could follow that through in Ezekiel chapter 14:14. Secondly, he followed God's instructions exactly. God gave him instructions, and Noah followed those instructions. Thirdly, he preached this righteousness and warned others of the consequences for not seeking God. And you could read about that in 2 Peter 2, verse 5. So here's Noah. He built the ark, got in the ark, and we have to remember he had no diesel engines. He had no sail. He had no rudder. He had no paddles, no compass, no GPS, no radar. And to top it all off, Noah up to this point had not even, he didn't know what rain was. When God talked about rain, I wonder if Noah even knew what he meant. Those were the situations, those were the conditions Noah followed God under. All he had was a total and a perfect trust in God. What about Timothy's grandmother, Lois? Maybe she is a person or someone that you have looked at and modeled your life after. Paul says to his spiritual son, Timothy, I miss you. I long to see you so I may be filled with joy. So there's something in the life of Timothy that encouraged Paul. And he had a longing to see him and to experience joy in that relationship. And so he makes reference to Timothy's grandmother here in 2 Timothy 1 verse 5. He says, for I am mindful of the sincere faith within you. Now where did he get it from? Which first dwelt in your grandmother, Lois, and in your mother, Eunice. And I am sure that it is in you as well. And for this reason I remind you to kindle afresh the gift of God which is in you. He encouraged him to continue in the faith. So the question comes again, are we influencing our grandchildren so that they become a joy to their parents and other people? Are we encouraging them to be faithful, to be obedient, to be respectful, responsible, and even fun to be with? You know, we have a lot of fun with our grandkids. We love to visit them. We have older grandkids. We have great grandkids that when we meet them on the street, they say, "Oh," and it's fun to have that relationship. But the question is, are we encouraging them to be faithful, obedient, respectful, responsible, and fun to be with? Or maybe we are just spoiling them. We love to do that as grandparents, don't we? Spoil our kids, and some of you may have the habit of having candy in your purse. I know some grandmas do. They always have candy in their purse, and then when the little grandson comes up and starts digging into that grandma's purse there to find that candy. At our house, we haven't spoiled our grandchildren with candy. So, so grandparents affect the lives of their grandchildren for good or ill, simply because they are there. And so it's important. A study shows that only 5%, listen to this, a study shows that only 5% of children have regular contact with at least one grandparent. 5%. That's not very much. One comment I read was that I'm just a charm on grandma's bracelet. Just a charm on grandma's bracelet. Just a reminder. So how can grandparents have an influence on their grandchildren? Well, let me suggest a few ways. We can teach them about God and spiritual things. I think it's of great importance that they see in us and hear from us the God stories, the things that have encouraged us, the things that have helped us to get where we are. We can guide them towards good marriages by modeling good ones. Very important in our day that we're living in. We can tell them often that we love them and commend them for the good things. They need our encouragement. And I know when we look back at our grandparenting, we haven't been as faithful in doing some of those things as we should have been. We can also hold them accountable. I think that coming from grandparents often has a lot more value, a lot more weight than coming from parents. We can believe them and believe in them. We can share our life, the good and the bad, so that they may learn from our experiences. And most certainly, we need to let them see how Christ has and continues to work in our life, even though there was a time we have made bad mistakes, we have failed miserably in our life's process. But we can encourage them that God is faithful. The role that we play as grandparents will be significant to the future generations. Just a few. I know some of you are not on statistics, and I sometimes feel they're boring, but I want to give you a few more. A study of the famed 18th century revival preacher Jonathan Edwards, 1703 to 58, that's 55 years, a life of 55 years is not very long, showed that of the 1,394 known descendants of this man, Jonathan Edwards, 100 became preachers and missionaries, 100 lawyers, 80 public officials, 75 Army and Navy officers, 65 college professors, 60 physicians, 60 prominent authors, 30 judges, 13 college presidents, 3 senators, and 1 vice president of the United States. Quite a legacy, quite an impact, I think, that he had on following generations. And then listen to this. Another man of that same area, Max Jukes, and you probably have heard that name, a petty thief, had 310 descendants who died as paupers, 150 criminals, 100 were drunkards, 7 were murderers, and more than half of the women were prostitutes. So I think if we think of those who will follow us, that the impression that we leave and the life that we live, the example, that the role model that we are to them, is we cannot put a value on it. And so as grandparents, and even as parents, we have a tremendous opportunity and responsibility. In America, every 24 hours, listen to this, every 24 hours, 3,000 children see their parents divorce. Every day. Every day, 1,629 children are put in adult jail. Every day, 3,228 children run away from home. Every day, 1,512 children drop out of school. 7,742 teens become sexually active every day. I believe that godly grandparents can have a tremendous influence on the lives of our youth and our grandchildren today. I want to close this morning, this part of our morning attention on grandparents, with another story. Pappy was a pleasant fellow. His face showed age, but when he smiled, even his wrinkles seemed to smile with him. He owned a pawn shop. Everyone knew him and respected and adored him. There was a room in the back of his shop where he spent time tinkering. There were pocket watches, clocks, trains, and whatever you could imagine. Sometimes he would close his eyes and relive a sweet, simple childhood memory. One day when he was in his shop, he heard the bell on the door. He had a bell on top of the door like some stores have. He heard the bell on the shop door. The bell had been in Pappy's family for over 100 years. He cherished it dearly. He went to greet his customer. At first, he didn't see anyone. His customer was shorter than the counter, and Pappy said, "How can I help you?" The little girl looked at Pappy with her big brown eyes and slowly scanned the room in search of something special. "I'd like to buy a present for my grandpa, but I don't know what to get." Pappy began to make suggestions about a pocket watch. "It's in good condition. I fixed it myself," he said. The little girl didn't answer. Finally, she walked to the door. She wiggled the door gently, gently to ring the bell. The little girl smiled with excitement. "This is just right. Mama says Grandpa loves music." Just then, Pappy knew what she wanted. She wanted his bell. He didn't want to break the little girl's heart. "I'm sorry, but that's not for sale. Maybe your grandpa would like a radio." The little girl looked at the radio and sighed. "No, I don't think so." In an effort to help her understand, Pappy told her the story of how the bell had been in his family for many years, and that was why he didn't want to sell it. The little girl said, "I guess I understand. Thank you anyway." Then Pappy thought of how the rest of the family was gone. That was, except for his estranged daughter, whom he had not seen in a decade. Pappy thought, why not pass the bell on to someone who would share it with a loved one? Excuse me. He said, "I've decided to sell the bell." The little girl said, "Oh, thank you. Grandpa will be so happy." Pappy felt good about helping the child, even though he knew he would miss the bell. Later that evening, as he prepared to close up shop, he found himself thinking about the bell. He thought about the child and wondered if her grandpa liked it. He knew that any grandfather would cherish anything from such a precious child. Just then, he thought he heard his bell. But he knew it was ridiculous. He had sold his bell. In a minute, he heard the bell again. He turned toward the door, and there stood the little girl. She was ringing the bell and smiling. Pappy was puzzled. "What's this? Have you changed your mind?" "No," she grinned. "Mama says it's for you." Before Pappy had time to say another word, the child's mother stepped into the doorway. Choking back the tears, she said, "Hello, Dad." So grandparents, great-grandparents, and future grandparents, I want to challenge us this morning that the bell is ringing. What are we going to leave for our grandchildren, for those who follow us? Maybe even if we don't have grandchildren, we can influence others. The life that we live will have a huge impact on those who come behind us. All of us will leave a legacy that is far greater than we might think. It could be positive or negative. And it is so important that we show our grandchildren how to live and lead godly lives. We need to show them how to love. We need to show them how to give and how to forgive. Proverbs 13:22 says, "A good man," and we could probably put the word woman in there as well, "leaves an inheritance for his children's children." And that word inheritance could mean a lot of things. It could refer to many things, but most of all, leaving an inheritance of faith for our grandchildren is important. So the question is, are we making a difference in the lives who follow? I want to try and switch thoughts here a little bit at this point. I know we're trying to put a lot into this morning. But we want to draw our attention to the Lord's table at this time in communion. As we conclude this service this morning and look for a moment at the last events of Jesus' life on earth. We think of the endless scourging, the walk to Golgotha, the cross and the crucifixion, and I appreciated so much the song that the quartet sang. It just was so fitting about Jesus built that bridge with a cross. And that's what it's all about. As Jesus was bounced between Herod and Pilate, he chooses to be silent in the face of all these accusations. He doesn't stand up for himself, he just takes it. In Isaiah chapter 53, verse 7, we read, "He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth." It is at the cross that we are reminded that it was our sins that put Jesus through the agony. The old covenant demanded a blood sacrifice for the forgiveness of sins. But listen to what we read in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 11 to 14. "Day after day, every priest stands and performs his religious duties. Again and again, he offers the same sacrifices which can never take away sins. But when this priest, Jesus, had offered for all time one sacrifice for sins, he sat down at the right hand of God. And since that time, he waits for his enemies to be made his footstool, because by one sacrifice, he has made perfect forever those who are being made whole." And so God sent his Son to be the sacrifice for our sin, yours and mine. We are guilty of putting him on that cross. Sometimes we look at the Romans and we accuse the Romans of nailing him down. We look at the Jewish leaders, we look at Pilate, and we forget about ourselves. We are the ones that put him there. It was my sin that drove the spikes into the Savior's hand. I want us to be reminded that this work of redemption is finished. It is finished. Once and for all, Jesus paid the penalty that was due us. No more is a sacrifice of blood required. Grace and mercy have been applied, and we have been redeemed. We are made free because of his death on Calvary and his rising again the third day, victorious over the grave. And as the spikes pierce his flesh and the blood drips to the ground, we are reminded of Jesus offering the cup and saying, "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins." So here Jesus is bringing his disciples together to observe the Passover meal. The focus was to remember the past when the death angel passed over Egypt, sparing the firstborn in the houses whose doorways were marked by the blood of the Lamb. But then Jesus is about to change all of that, to change the meaning of the meal forever and give it new dimension. He was giving his disciples a preview of what was going to take place in the next 12 hours. But they didn't understand. And this morning we need to remember Jesus the way he asked us to remember him. And that is by a supper, a meal together, a celebration. A celebration of God extending grace to fallen man through his Son. And so we want to join together around his table. and remember. And as the brethren come, excuse me, as the brethren come and join me in front here, I want to ask us to just ponder these thoughts a moment. And in our heart, just check. What is our relationship to the Lord, to man, and others? Focus on that for a moment as we prepare. Ask the men to come, please.